Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning. The first case for our January term is the State of South Dakota Appellant versus Wilson and Midmore Appellees. As you fairly obvious, there's only four of us here this morning. Justice Meyer Henry is ill and will be fully participating in this case. He has prepared for it, but just doesn't feel up to attending oral argument. Our oral arguments are archived on the internet, and she will have full access to the oral arguments, and certainly sends her regrets, wishes she could be here. For the appellant, State of South Dakota, we have Mr. Michael Moore. You'll be doing the opening.
Yes, sir.
All right. And then Mr. Jeffrey Banks, you will be doing the rebuttal.
That's right, Your Honor.
And Mr. Eichstead, you are here.
I'm here.
All right. And for the appellees, Mr. Van Norman, you represent both appellees, is that correct? All right. Very well. Then, Mr. Moore, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michael Moore. I'm the Beadle County State's Attorney, and in this case, I am representing Custer County as a special deputy state's attorney. In this case, defendants Wilson and Minmore were arrested after five individuals were shot at Legion Lake Lodge in Custer State Park on August 6, 2008. During the investigation, numerous pieces of evidence were gathered that links Wilson and Minmore to this shooting. That evidence includes a white pickup truck and a gun clip that was found inside said pickup truck. In this case, and why before this court, a dispute arose between the defense and the state over the examination of the white pickup truck. The trial court, at the request of the defense, received ex parte information and filings and entered an order based on those ex parte submissions and filings without allowing the state to participate in that process. It is the state's position that in doing so, the trial court abused its discretion. I'd first like to start by talking about ex parte proceedings. The South Dakota Code of Judicial Conduct speaks to this, and it specifically says courts may not engage in ex parte hearings involving substantive matters unless expressly authorized by law to do so. This court has said in State v. McCrary, where a judge initiates ex parte communications, prejudice is implicit and there may be reversible error. Federal Rule of Criminal Procedure 16D1, which is the basis for 23A1316, in the advisory committee that developed the rule, specifically said ex parte proceedings are disfavored and not to be encouraged. There are a litany of federal cases, specifically Libby, that speak to this as well, saying courts disfavor ex parte hearings and permit them only in the rarest of circumstances. With that said, in this case, since current defense counsel was involved in out-of-state defense counsel, when they got involved on September 27th, there has been seven live hearings. Five of those hearings were in person. Two were telephonic. Four times in those five hearings, defense counsel met with the judge ex parte. On one occasion...
Did the state get advance notice of the request, or did you just find out when you got there?
We found out when we got there on the hearing on the 23rd. We showed up for the hearing at 11 o'clock, and defense counsel and the court were meeting in chambers ex parte, and we did not know that was going to happen. We did receive notice of a hearing on May 15th that was going to take place ex parte, and then the submission on the pickup truck was done. A motion was filed. We were notified of that motion being filed on, I believe, June 27th, and the court entered its order on June 28th, the next day, without having any type of hearing that we were aware of.
But there are circumstances, aren't there, where there has to be an ex parte hearing with the court for certain things? Aren't there, or would you say there are no exceptions?
I believe that there are occasions when the court can meet ex parte with parties. And those have been delineated in case law. This court, I don't believe, has ever spoken to that specific point, but when we're basing it on this statute, if we look at the federal cases that have talked about this and a few state cases that have talked about this, there are few times that they have allowed this. The times are classified information, protection of witnesses, protection of an ongoing investigation, an informant, the embarrassment of parties. Never has it been done that we can find where it's been done to protect defense theory, work product, or as they promote in this case, or the fact that we forced them to do this because of a discovery dispute.
What's the standard review here? Do we give deference to the trial court at the abuse of discretion, or is this a question of law, or what is it?
I believe it's both, Your Honor. First of all, discovery disputes, the trial court is supposed to address those, and this court reviews those findings abuse of discretion. However, the interpretation of the statute is a matter of law and de novo review, and this court should review that, the trial court's interpretation, and whether this statute, 23A.13.16, is actually being utilized properly in this matter.
What is the discovery dispute with respect to the pickup? I understand that you're complaining about all of the ex parte hearings and motions, et cetera, that have been filed. But the only issue on appeal here today is the pickup and the granting of that order without any hearing. You say that it's a discovery dispute. What is the dispute, and how does that not justify ex parte information?
The dispute in and of itself, defense wants access to the pickup truck to do an examination of that pickup truck. The state has no problem with that happening. The state would like to see that happen in a manner where the evidence is preserved and protected, and so the integrity of that evidence is maintained. And the current order that the judge has entered does not do that. So the conversations that we had with the defense, the state would suggest how this should be done. The defense disagreed with that, and the next thing the state knows is the judge enters an order giving them unfettered access to the pickup truck, allows them to...
Have you had an opportunity to tell the judge your position about this order in this pickup truck?
We have not done that, and if I can address that to the court, I know this we're here on the pickup truck, but if... And we... There's been numerous ex parte filings, and this court knows what those are, defense knows what those are, trial court knows what those are, state doesn't know what's in those. But when they filed their brief on July 7th, a motion for discovery compliance, and this is why the whole process is important, they said in that, and I assume they said it in the motion to examine a pickup truck, however that's under seal, and we didn't see that, but the language says those portions of the motion that address matters of theory of defense and which otherwise contain protected information are submitted under seal on the grounds and for the reasons as previously set forth in earlier submissions of this court. Their own submissions and motions bring in the relevancy of those prior hearings. And the history that we've had with the trial court when we objected to the gun clip met with no results. We filed a motion to reconsider. We filed a motion to have a Daubert hearing. We filed numerous motions regarding the gun clip. And the court just summarily denied those by basically sending us an email. So we didn't think it was prudent at that point to address the trial court.
If you prevail, what relief are you seeking?
We are asking this court to reverse the order on the pickup truck. And I think it's important that this court also give guidance to the trial court in when and if these ex parte proceedings should take place. Because as I said, we've had five hearings in person. There's been four times when the defense has met with a judge ex parte. They filed nine motions in this case. Five were filed either under seal or partially under seal. They filed eight documents under seal. This is a process that just continues to get worse and worse. And without just reversing this order, solves this immediate problem, but it doesn't solve the problem of the bigger picture. And I believe this court needs to give the lower court guidance on how to resolve that.
Do you know what the subjects of those ex parte hearings were?
Some of the subjects we do know what they were. The hearing on February 23rd, and if I give you some history on this, they filed a motion to be present while we tested the gun clip. That was the motion, and that was filed mostly under seal. When we got to the hearing, as I said, defense counsel and the judge were meeting in chambers. When they came out of chambers, the judge informed us that now the defense was going to conduct a secret test on this clip, and we were going to make the clip available to defense to do so. And they weren't going to tell us what they were going to do or anything. So we still had the gun clip was a little different because we still had additional testing we wanted to do on the gun clip. There was an order precluding us from doing that that was entered early in the proceeding. But we were prevented from completing our test. So they were going to have the gun clip and do a secret test. But we didn't even know that until they got out of ex parte because their motion wasn't even for that purpose.
Let me make sure I understand this. You're saying that on that occasion, when you arrived at the courthouse, they were conducting a hearing in chambers, and you had absolutely no notice that was occurring or that could occur?
We had the motion that was filed partially under seal. We had no idea that they were going to have a live hearing ex parte excluding us from that.
What other subjects did the court have hearing ex parte that you know the subject?
The first subject when this started on November 6th, they had a hearing ex parte on having both defendants represented by one counsel.
That would probably be an ex parte type hearing, though, wouldn't it? The prosecutor isn't entitled to input on that, are they?
Well, I think that's probably a fair representation. I've been involved where they've had joint counsel before, one counsel's represented joint defendants, and I've never been involved where that's been done ex parte. But that happened ex parte. That was the first one. The next one was the gun clip on the 23rd. Again, they met in chambers. We then came into court. We were then, I believe they went back into chambers during that hearing because we had brought up some issues, our concerns about that. The judge then went back into chambers with the defense counsel, had a further discussion with them ex parte, assuming about the clip, and then returned to the court and issued his ruling.
What other subjects?
On May 15th, again, there was another ex parte hearing, and this was, again, done on the gun clip. And the reason for this is their position on the gun clip had changed. As I said, at the beginning, they just wanted to be present. Then they wanted to do a secret test. The order as a result of February 23rd said that they could not disassemble the clip. Well, on May 5th, after that, they made a motion that they had to disassemble the clip to do whatever it was they were going to do. So on May 15th, I assume the hearing had to do with disassembling the clip, and that's when an expert witness testified ex parte, I assume, on that topic. And then I don't know if there was a hearing ex parte on the current order of the pickup truck.
Did I understand you to say that you expect the court to lay out guidelines for the future as to what they can do and what they can't do?
Yes.
How would you expect us to do that? Are we supposed to look in a crystal ball and consider every possible circumstance or event without knowing what's coming up here, without having the facts, essentially?
I don't think this court needs to look into a crystal ball to do this. The court can look at federal cases and state cases, and basically the court can instruct the trial court to follow the proper procedure. First of all, statute 23A.13.16 says any ex parte submission shall be in writing. These were live hearings. So that would be the first guidance, is if you have these, they should do it in writing. The second is follow the procedure set out by the advisory committee that developed the rule, and first determine whether an ex parte hearing is appropriate. And if it is, I think...
Well, I agree with you there, that, and that's part of your conclusion in your brief, that you want the secret testing and ex parte procedures reversed and direct the trial court to conduct open hearings or an evidence testing and discovery. But now you're telling us you want us to to lay out guidelines and so forth. Isn't that the trial court? Isn't that the trial court's job, and prior to that, the attorney's job to present authority for what they're asking to be done?
I agree with that 100%. That there's, and maybe that's the guidance the court should give, is give an opportunity for the state to be present and say, you know, this isn't appropriate for an ex parte hearing. And if you're going to have an ex parte hearing, here's the steps you can follow, and we could submit a brief to the trial court on that issue.
You agree this is not a declaratory judgment action where you're asking us what the law, to propound on the law as to what it is in this type of circumstance?
Yes, Your Honor, I agree with that.
Okay.
Let me just throw a hypothetical at you and see what you think about, you know, how a judge is supposed to deal with a dilemma where defense has a theory about a particular item of evidence, and so they want that theory tested scientifically. If the theory doesn't work out, then they're not going to offer an evidence. And only if they decide to offer an evidence are you entitled to discover under our law. So how does a court go about doing that, allowing the item to be tested scientifically before the prosecutor learns about it? Because if it isn't successful, the prosecutor's never going to learn about it. How does a judge do that?
I think I can respond to that in a couple different ways. First of all, the big thing is the state should be invited to the hearing to talk about that, because I think the first issue the trial court has to address is whether what the state is requesting and what the defense wants to do actually implicates defense theory. I mean, the fact that, and I know it's in the briefing we talk about this, but the fact that they're going to do an examination of the truck, and we're requesting that if they remove evidence from the truck, tell us where you swabbed. If you do fingerprints of the front left panel of the truck, tell us you did fingerprints there. That does not, in my opinion, relate anything about defense theory. It doesn't relate anything about work product. So there's no reason to have an ex parte hearing. And that's all we're asking them to do is basically tell us what you're taking. The same thing that the state would be required to do when processing evidence.
Okay, maybe this is a divergence, but I understand, too, though, you were demanding, or someone on the prosecution team was demanding that you be present during the testing. Now, that isn't the right the prosecutor has, is it?
We requested to be present during the examination, not the testing. If they remove evidence, they could tell us, hey, we took a swab from the windshield of the pickup truck, and they could take it to their DNA person. As long as it's not a consumable sample, then I think there might be an issue that we want to talk about. But they can test it. If they take glass out of that pickup truck, they can take it, test it. We don't need to know what test they're doing.
But if they're doing a test, if they're doing an examination, that's all that is the testing. If they're trying to see if some mechanism works some way or doesn't work some way, and if it does work one way, then they want to offer an evidence. If it doesn't, they won't. The prosecutor isn't entitled to be present during that. Is there? Otherwise, defense counsel is giving the prosecutor evidence against their own client.
Well, and that may be the case. But what should happen is in the trial court, we should have a hearing on that. And if the defense says, well, we want to go into this truck and we want to do this, and we can't have the state present, and we can't know what the state's doing, then maybe the court should say, well, submit that ex parte in writing, and then the court can review that and scrutinize it and decide whether that is something appropriate for ex parte ruling. And if it is, then he can accept it and file it under seal and then determine whether a protective order is effective. Based on, I don't know what's in the sealed record, but the trial court did not do that. And those would be issues that I would love to be able to go to the trial court and have an open, meaningful hearing on. And again, it would be my position that would be a rare occurrence where there would be something that they would tell us that they're going to do to that pickup that would actually implicate work product or defense theory.
The trial court did do that in one of the first hearings. I think it was at the conclusion, maybe of the conflict hearing. The court said, I might not have the right hearing, but at the conclusion of one of the hearings, the defense said, we want to submit some materials under seal, or I forgot the wording, but the court said that would be good I welcome that. Submit something. And then, of course, the motions, the sealed motions started flowing after that.
Right.
So at least on one occasion, it looks like that was discussed, the need to submit something ex parte, and the court said, yes, do that.
That was on the November 6th hearing, at the end of the hearing when they were discussing the gun clip. And at that point, they were discussing wanting to be present while we did our test. And at that point, there was questions that raised by the state on why that's necessary, and the defense did make that statement to the court, and the court did say, well, I'd appreciate that. But there was no authority cited for such a submission. I don't know what the submission was. And obviously there was a motion filed. Whether that was the motion that was coming from that hearing, it was the motion was filed February 21st, so it was 3 months later. I don't know if that was a submission based on that conversation or not. I see I have about 40 seconds left. Another thing that I want to address is one of the implications of this before I leave is there's an affidavit that the court is aware of that the state just found out about on page 7 of the defendant's brief. We didn't even know that existed. And that was a statement that some questions were asked that were attributed to the state, that we were having these discussions and we were being obstinate and being unreasonable. That is a great example of that's not defense theory. That's not work product. That's a statement by the state. That should not be under seal. And the state deserves an opportunity to truthfully and accurately address the court when we're being accused of something like that in wrongdoing.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Your time has expired. Mr. Van Norman, you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. I'd like to address the last statement, if I could, very quickly here. I was very concerned about the statement that the state had made in the reply brief regarding me personally, because I had been the author of the affidavit in question, and I understand that they had responded to that, and I believe adequately, I hope, for the court's consideration, and that is as to whether or not I was honest or misleading the court. And I certainly was neither intentionally dishonest nor intending to mislead the court. That wasn't an accusation, by the way, as to the state's requirements or requests with regard to the testing of the truck. It was an outline of a culmination of a series of issues that we'd had with regard to discovery. And
the state never got a chance to respond to that. I mean, you make declarations about what the state did wrong and why you need to have an ex parte hearing, but the state never had a chance to even to address your accusations to say whether they were true or false.
And I understand that, Your Honor. That's correct. I'd like to put this in a little context, and I hope answers that question. We were faced with a trial date in September at that point. We had been wrangling over getting access to the pickup truck, which is an important part of our case, for many months. The state had represented, to me anyway, and I believe to the court, the trial court, that they had finished processing that truck many months earlier. We simply wanted access to the pickup truck.
You're saying that, I'm going to characterize this, but you can correct me.
Yeah.
You're saying because you were in a hurry, it's okay to skip the process?
No, I'm not saying that just because we were in a hurry, but that is a factor here. We were trying to arrange for experts to come from all over the country to do the work that we were trying to support our theory of defense with here. And it isn't only that we're in a hurry, but we'd already been stopped with regard to the first issue on the gun clip. And quite frankly, there's been so much wrangling in this case that it's an unusual situation in my experience with regard to pretrial discovery. And yes, that is a factor that we needed to get it done.
What else besides wrangling and time justify an ex parte affidavit?
Well,
accusing the other side or characterizing the other side's discovery compliance. You've identified two factors now.
Yes.
Time.
Our clients, I'm sorry.
And problems.
Yes. Well, our clients are pretrial detainees. At that point, they'd been in jail for almost a year.
But those two things don't justify ex parte consideration of...
No, not alone, they don't. They are...
Okay. What legally does that?
Yes. And the theory of defense that we're pursuing here, I believe, does. And I know in the court has had access. The state obviously hasn't had access to what we're specifically looking for on that pickup truck.
Well, I've got to tell you, I've read all the materials, and most of what's in there is not related to anything except discovery disputes between the defense and the prosecution about compliance and we won't do this unless they do this and that kind of thing. Yes, you lay out some defense theory, but it seems to me, from what I've read, and correct me if I'm wrong, mm-hmm. most of the dispute here is simply about the state's conditions or non-conditions, the state's timing, and those types of things. I don't see anything that's really related to the theories you present.
Page 6, I think, of our submission with regard to the pickup truck in late June is a very specific statement as to what we're looking for with regard to the pickup truck and our need to have our experts look at that pickup truck without interference and to confer. And that is exactly as much as I've been able to disclose. I'm in a funny position, I think, Your Honor, with regard to the source of the information that I'm working from, which is privileged. And so the disclosure, the extent of the disclosure that I've been able to make, even to the trial court, has been limited. And I understand the frustration that the state may face with that. I think the trial court also has been faced with some frustration in trying to move this case forward, too, in a way that protects what we've represented in good faith to be concerns that we have in developing or trying to explore our defenses here.
But why can't you just said source of information. Why can't you make a motion before the trial court and say, we have a source of information, and based on that, we need to test the pickup truck. We want a motion. We want a hearing. We want a ruling. Why isn't that adequate in this case?
I think I've really addressed as much as I could on the factual context, Your Honor. And
why isn't it adequate to use that procedure? To simply make a motion, tell the judge, I have a confidential source of information that requires us to test the pickup and have a hearing before the judge, argue it, and see what the judge says.
I perceive that's what we had done with regard to the pickup motion, Your Honor.
Well, as I read the record, you submitted a motion
yes.
that was sealed ex parte. The state never got to see the relevant parts, and the judge ended up making a ruling on that sealed motion without the state ever seeing the motion, without there being a hearing, and without the state knowing what's in the motion.
I agree. I think I misperceived what you had said. Okay. That's correct. I believe because of the nature of the contents of our motion that it was appropriate to submit it ex parte. You're saying that why not do it with the state's participation?
Correct. The statute says that if you want to submit matters to the judge alone, it says upon motion, the court may permit a party to make a showing in whole or part in the form of a written statement to be inspected by the judge alone. Now, that seems to me to require a motion, and it seems to contemplate a written statement, but it doesn't seem to me that it contemplates secret motions, secret hearings, and that type of thing. Do you agree with that reading of the statute?
No, I don't. And my understanding is that if we are pursuing, in this limited circumstance, access to property that was our client's, the pickup truck, Mr. Wilson's, and pursuing our testing of that for our own purposes, pursuing it to reach a theory of defense, that, yes, I think that's appropriate in these limited circumstances. I have not previously done this kind of ex parte motion for any other purpose. You know, in this instance, it's a very limited application by us, I believe.
Well, Mr. Van Norman, you're a very experienced lawyer. Have you ever done anything like this in any state or federal court in your entire practice?
Yes. You mean on an evidentiary issue of this sort exactly, or just ex parte?
Ex parte motion, ex parte hearing, and a ruling without the state ever having participated.
Yes, I have. And it hasn't been on an evidentiary issue. But I have, certainly. And it's usually been with regard to dispute. Well, in fact, I made a list, if I could look at that. It has to do with joint representation, as in this case, with situations with discharge of counsel, pro se representation, where I've been put in the position after having represented something, someone having been put in the position of standby counsel. That's in both federal and state court. I have watched federal prosecutors after the fact, having submitted potentially exculpatory evidence to the court for the determination by the court as to whether or not that evidence is truly exculpatory.
But that's been after a hearing.
No, that was an ex parte submission. The court made the determination and then notified counsel as to whether or not that evidence needed to be turned over under Brady and the rest of the cases interpreting Brady.
Well, let me take you back to the statute then. What does that language mean in the second sentence of Rule 16 that says, upon motion, a party may make, in essence, an ex parte showing?
Yes.
Doesn't that, for instance, the affidavit, wouldn't you have to file a motion first to submit a sealed affidavit?
I understand the procedural question you're asking me then. We did not do that in this situation.
And what justifies that?
I think I've answered to my best ability, Your Honor, the circumstances that really compelled us to want to move forward to get access to this evidence that we hadn't had access to given the passage of time and the state's representation that they were done with it.
Well, then I go back to Justice Konenkamp's question. Are you suggesting that expediency or because you're in a hurry justifies not following the procedural requirements of the statute?
Yeah, and I think you and I have an honest dispute as to what the statute actually requires. But in this situation, because I believe it's unusual, and I believe Judge Delaney perceived it to be unusual, that it does, yes. I think the cases, Libby, Addison, the cases that the state has relied on, really talk about the need to creatively address in the trial courts circumstance by circumstance they develop in cases such as this. And I think that's what Judge Delaney has done.
What case do you have that supports proceeding in this procedural manner? I don't want to hear about constitutional rights to protect information, but procedurally, what I didn't see anything in your brief that would justify procedurally proceeding in this manner.
I think Libby and Addison both discuss not that we have to file a motion first to precede a motion if it's going to be an ex parte presentation, but they talk about access to the court when there's an urgent need, and that's my understanding of those cases. One of the questions I think that the state has raised here is remedy in the event that the court feels it needs to give the trial court guidance. I respectfully disagree that there is need for the trial court to have guidance here. I think there's nothing in the orders from the trial court, even assuming for a minute that I've erred on how the procedure went with regard to notice to the government.
In the matter of guidance, obviously we don't want to get into specifics, but do you anticipate the possibility of requests for these types of hearings in this future litigation? And if you're not comfortable answering that, because
I can.
Okay.
I can. There have been some federal filings in this court, in this case now, with regard to what are called TUI requests of federal agencies that I'm sure the state now has access to, which has discussed a considerable part of what the theory of defense is, not the specifics as applied in these motions, but in more general terms for access with regard to self-defense. And so I doubt that there'll be any more applications of this sort once we have access to the specific items we wanted to test here. Yes. The remedy, if I might talk about that a little more, Judge Delaney in his order, which is in my reply brief at page 8, I think tried to fashion something that was practical and practicable in this instance. He did the same thing after this court denied the intermediate petition on the gun clip. And even though we had continued wrangling and discussion, the judge then ordered that there be a videographer and a special master present, and those things were carried out. I think both of those orders, the two orders that are here, obviously the only order on appeal is the pickup truck, both of those orders indicate a reasoned consideration of what the problems were. Now, and I would like to address one other thing, and that it does trouble me with regard to this notice issue as to whether we should even have access to make an ex parte application. Under the circumstances here, I believe that there hasn't been any harm to the government, and I think that is always the analysis that on the defense side we look at in these circumstances. Judge Delaney's orders protected the government's interests. With regard to the pickup truck, everything that's done is going to be reported back to the court. And whether or not someone has a quibble with it, and I haven't heard this, but I'm with an obligation under the circumstances to report to the court everything is also done. And there was a special master, as I said, in the first instance, who was to report and did report to the court, and a videotape was provided to the court.
What you're saying, if I understand you, is that we could send it back and tell the judge to do it right, but the result would be the same.
Yes, I believe it would be, and I think it's appropriate. And yes, it may have been an erroneous procedure, and I certainly will take that on my shoulders in this instance, because I've been local counsel and handled that portion of this case. But I do not believe, as I just indicated, that there would be a different result. I don't have a further presentation for the court. If there are any further questions, I'd certainly be happy to try to answer them.
Your interpretation of the statute referred to by Justice Zinner then implies to you that the word motion just simply means a motion to the court without any notice to the state?
Yes. I think,
and
Your
you
Honor,
proceeded in that in all, you proceeded that way in all seven hearings or in all, yeah. In all seven hearings?
No. After the first couple of applications, I did give written notice to the state. And that was the concern that Justice Enners mentioned earlier that I was thinking of at that point. On the other applications, and Mr. Moore was not part of the case at that time, as I recall, I had talked with Ms. Kelly directly about the applications, just to alert her that they'd been made. So, again, I'm saying that, if I erred in that regard, I ask that the court not hold that against my clients, obviously, with regard to moving this case along and getting access to the evidence.
Okay. I have one last thing.
Yes.
As I hear your argument today and read your brief, the dispute about the pickup is very simply access to test the pickup.
That's correct.
Is that fair?
Yes.
Now, what is it about that request that, without disclosing, obviously, your confidential information, I don't see anything that really requires confidential information to resolve that dispute, whether you should have access to the pickup. The objections that I've read in the record that have created this conflict deal with state preconditions, state dragging their feet, those kinds of allegations. Is that fair?
Yes.
So if those are the problems with respect to access to the truck, why can't that be hashed out in open court? What requires secret information to discuss whether or not the state's dragging their feet, whether they can have preconditions, that type of thing.
Are you referring mainly to the discovery compliance motion as opposed to the pickup motion itself?
The pickup motion.
Okay.
And the discovery compliance motion attempts to enforce that.
Yes, it does. What my intention was when I filed the motion on the pickup was to inform the court as specifically as I could as to what we were looking for on the pickup so that we could get access to that pickup for those purposes. That is a presentation that is drawn from the confidential source that I made reference to earlier that I believe justified and does justify an ex parte presentation. Otherwise, the mere access to the pickup for testing purposes, no, doesn't justify a separate ex parte presentation.
Well, and I don't think there's anybody in this courtroom that would argue with your right to have access to the pickup to test. Do you agree? I mean, that's just a colloquialism, but no-brainer.
It seems like it is, but Mr. Moore and I had a dispute about the terms of our access, and those were, I thought, very serious issues.
That's exactly my point. If the dispute is about the terms of access, why can't that be argued in open court? Why does confidential information need to be disclosed about the terms of the access?
Because, Your Honor, I'm not trying to quibble with you, certainly, but because the explanation as to what we want to do with that pickup truck requires us to divulge information about the specifics. It really requires something that I wasn't free to tell in open court, and I don't believe I've even gone as far as I could. And it goes directly to our theory of defense.
Thank you, Mr. Van Norman. Your time has expired.
You.
Mr. Banks, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Jeff Banks. I'm a special deputy state's attorney for Custer County in this matter. And Justice Sinner, I'd like to, I guess, expound on your point that the dispute regarding the pickup is, in fact, a discovery dispute, but it's not about evidence testing. It's about evidence itself and removing evidence. And that order that Judge Delaney signed allows the defense to remove evidence and strictly prohibits them from disclosing that evidence to the state. And that order is in direct contrast to State versus Guthrie, where this court said that an attorney or its investigators cannot be a depository for physical evidence, whether it's exculpatory or inculpatory.
Isn't that really premature, though, to argue about that at this point?
Well,
it seems to me that the defense is fully justified in getting some kind of an order that would require, if they have a special theory, as Justice Koenigam pointed out, that they need to test, they may not want to use that at trial. And you have no right to that unless it is going to be used at trial. So isn't that argument a little bit of a red herring? Because that's something to be addressed down the road.
I don't believe it is, Your Honor, but I would say that we absolutely agree that the defense has the right to test, examine that pickup. What we disagree about and what the dispute centers around is the manner in which that will be done. And that's why the state should have the right to be heard in the trial court on how to resolve the manner in which that will be done. And I agree that there is no need for the defense to divulge work product theory of defense or any other secret information in order for us, with the aid of the trial court, to resolve that dispute. We want to know what they are taking and where they are taking it from. They don't have to reveal their tests. They don't have to reveal why they want to do that. And I think a lot of the cases deal with protective orders that are requested by the government. That's just the way it's gone in those cases. But I think Justice Koenigam raised a good point where we could maybe envision a situation in this case where the defense has a witness, an informant, that indicates to them that you need to test this pickup, you need to test this portion of the pickup, because you're going to get some something useful to you. And I think under the statutes and under the cases, it would be appropriate for the defense to file a motion with notice to the state and say that we want to go in and test this, but we don't want to reveal the source of our information and why we want to do that. And I think the procedure and the way the statute is worded requires a motion to be filed with the court, with the state, and then we can go in and the trial court can decide, can do that two-part test, whether this is properly heard ex parte, and then whether a protective order should be issued. And we can help the trial court, and we can tell them, well, Judge, there's no authority that we can find, and we certainly know there's no authority the defense can find, that allows this to be done ex parte, because we're not asking them to reveal work product or theory of defense. And I think that's the procedure that was followed in Addison, the Maryland case, where the defense attorney wanted access to the victim's medical information. She filed a motion. The state had notice. The state came in, objected to the request, and the trial court denied it because the defense counsel was unable to provide any authority for it. Justice Gilbert and I would also say that we do know that there will be further ex parte filings on the gun clip, because when their experts went in secret and disassembled that clip, we got a call the next day because all we wanted to do was put the clip in the gun and shoot it for ballistics purposes. We got a call asking us not to do that. We thought it had already been done. It turns out it wasn't. So we stopped. We told our experts, don't do that. But if we come back into the trial court, that's going to be another dispute. And based on what's happened in this case, there's going to be another ex parte filing because the defense assertion of work product and theory of defense. And that's why it's important that the trial court gets guidance under the statutes and under the federal cases. And how not only that they're required to apply that two-prong test, but how to perform the analysis when doing that test. And I think the affidavit that Mr. Van Norman opened up with is a perfect example of how we should resolve these disputes. They, in their brief, recited this affidavit, which we saw for the first time, in our opinion, accusing us of being obstinate as it comes to examining the pickup. When we put that in our reply brief, defense took that as an accusation against them of a violation of an ethical obligation. He called me and said, you're accusing me of an ethical violation. I said, no, we're not. I'd be more than happy to write a letter explaining that. And it's just like the Rhode Island court said. Most of discovery takes place between the parties without court intervention. And I think that that's a perfect example. We were able to work that out because he was able to call me. But with the affidavit that the defense filed under seal, we were blindsided by it, and we had no opportunity to come in and tell the trial court, that's not right, that's not what happened. We have a dispute, and this is why we dispute it, and this is how we think it needs to be resolved. And we were totally restricted from giving our viewpoint on that. And again, a comment by Mr. Van Norman that Judge Delaney perceived this as unusual circumstances requiring these ex parte proceedings. Well, Judge Delaney didn't have any choice but to perceive it as unusual because he was only getting one side of the story. Now, with the gun clip, that is a little bit different from the pickup in the sense that there's a real concern on our part that their testing of it, whether it was swabbing it for DNA or a gunshot residue or fingerprints or whatever, would affect our ability to put that clip in the gun and shoot it. And I think that exemplifies the reason that we need to have our experts there, in addition to their experts, and tell the judge, well, our experts tell us that it will affect our ability. And then the judge can make a decision on a discovery dispute based on both sides of the story. But in that case, on the gun clip, the judge said, I know enough about ballistics. I can protect the state's interests. I would submit that only an advocate can protect the state's interests, and we were denied that opportunity. As to the order itself, Mr. Van Norman said it was reasonable. I would submit it's unreasonable in the sense that it, is directly in contrast with Guthrie in that it allows them to remove evidence. And what happened after this court denied our request for an appeal on the gun clip is on May 15th, the trial court heard expert ex parte testimony from the defense as to why they should be able to do further testing. And that's why we should have the opportunity to present our point. Basically, what we want in this case is we want notice, we want the right to be heard, and we want the right to participate in resolving these discovery disputes. If this court adopts a defense position and endorses these ex parte submissions under these circumstances, the floodgates are going to open for ex parte proceedings, and the effect is going to be that the state, who bears the burden of proof, is going to be denied access to evidence, unable to complete its evidence testing, and is basically going to be excluded from the discovery process. Defense is going to be allowed to remove evidence, and the trial court is going to substitute itself in the position of the state and its experts. And what's going to happen is we're going to turn the search to the truth into a poker game, and that is an abuse of discretion. This is a discovery dispute. It's not about the results of forensic testing. The discovery statutes do not contemplate the situation under these circumstances where the defense and the trial court are in the courtroom resolving these disputes and the state is banished to the hallway. Thank you. I have nothing further.
Thank you, Mr. Banks. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.